Hello again, everyone. Welcome. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 127. And if this is, if everyone's listening to this fresh, and it's not like a year past and you're just going back to stuff, this is the day before Thanksgiving. So I wish everybody just the healthiest, happiest Thanksgiving, however you have it, whether you're lucky enough to be with family and friends or the unusual 2021 of not like any others in the world. Whatever you're doing, I hope it's good for you, and I hope that everybody is safe and healthy and getting through this year. So today's episode, in a positive light, is going to be primarily, this is for my pointing retriever people. So this one's just going to be about that. No generalities. This kind of applies just to retrievers that point in the upland field, or at least that you hope that they do. So what I'm going to talk about, and then follow with a story. I like the story thing. If you guys don't want it, just turn it off when the story starts. But it's, I think it's compelling to me when I learn things. If somebody can relate some things where it's real world happened, I really like that instead of just, you know, this is how it is and just do this. So I'm doing that and hoping that people enjoy it. But the one we're going to do today is going to talk about kicking in the pointing, bringing out the point. Does this dog actually point or not? And I'm going to talk about things that I've seen and things that I have experienced. And a lot of times when I talk about, and this isn't a one-trick pony. All right, this is what you do, and this is how you do it, because that's just not how these dogs are. They are all over the map. And I hope I can kind of get that across with some of these stories that I tell. But there's a lot of different ways that people do get the pointing things going. And I'm going to say right now up front, there's not like one way or two ways or this is what you have to do. I'm going to talk about what I've seen and what I've seen work, things I do, things that I personally don't do. But I'm going to talk about what I've seen where if the pointing has been a bit of an issue or a little bit confusing, at least some of the approaches and some of the whys, what it looks like helps and doesn't help. So I'm going to offer that to my pointing people, particularly you guys with young dogs. And boy, I'll tell you, when you get the little guys between about, 4 or 5 months and maybe a year, and you know, you see stuff that was early when they were 8 weeks, 12 weeks old, and you're going, oh, this is great. And then it just all goes to heck. or you don't see any pointing at all, and it's out of the two greatest pointing labs of all time, and you're not seeing it. Or you see pointing early, and then it just fades away, and they become highly aggressive. We all see all sorts of things with these dogs. So whatever it is you're seeing, you're not the only one, whatever it is. It may be helpful to find out that a lot of other people have gone through what you've gone through, and sometimes it comes out nicely on the other side, and sometimes it doesn't. So I'm going to just talk about what I've seen, what in terms of initiating point, and then once you get point, how do you keep it there and not have it go away? Because, again, there's advice all over the map on this stuff, and always what people tell you, you know, is what they've experienced. Well, I had three dogs and they were all this way. Of course, they were all the same bloodline, so that kind of makes sense. Or whatever. It just can be very interesting. So what it would be good for all you guys to do, and this is particularly you guys with young dogs, if you can get your 8-week-old, 10-week-old, 12-week-old puppy, if you can get them on real birds. Now, real birds is real birds. I'm not talking about clipping some pheasant wings from your South Dakota trip and tying them onto a bumper and putting that out in the field, because those are wings of a dead animal tied onto plastic. And that is not, in these dogs, that is not the same as a living thing that exudes a life force that outgasses, you know, the real smells of a living, breathing animal. It's not the same thing. And I've never seen that, you know, they might really like it because it's, you know, there's dead animal. And young dogs and many dogs, their propensity with a dead animal is to eat it. So, or at the very least, pick it up and carry it off. but they're going to eat it. So I've never seen an advantage to that, and I've never seen that have anything to do with pointing. You may see a real young dog point something like that. You know, I've watched some English pointers. There was a feather off of a bird that we'd been training that was just laying in the trail where we were walking, and that little eight-week-old English pointer just locked up on the feather. Just a lone feather sitting there. So very, very pointy breeds or very, very pointy dogs may at first scent, when they just get that scent and some primal thing happens in their head, you know, they may initiate a point. That happens a lot more with those super pointers than it does with our, you know, mixed, our go get it, no, don't go get it pointing retrievers. So if that happens, that's cool. It does not mean necessarily that that's what's going to continue to happen. So to initiate pointing, it's great. If it doesn't mean it's going to work, but it's great if you start as soon as they're old enough to sort of understand what's happening through their olfactory system or even their visual system. A lot of times, and I've told this many times, you know, I've had little eight-week-old puppies. We'll just have a chucker out there, and they just, or a quail or something, and they just walk, and it flies away, and they have no idea what just happened. You know, everyone's looking, oh, is it going to point? Is he, what's, and the dog just is sort of oblivious, like he stepped over a big stick. So many times, these dogs, it doesn't, what goes on in their head is not what you would like it to be. It's just not there yet. Like I said in a prior podcast, it's like taking a three-year-old and showing them pictures of J-Lo and going, what do you think of that? You know, and they're going to go, I don't know. Do you have a cartoon? It just isn't going to mean anything to them. Eventually, you know, sometimes at 8 weeks, it does. A lot of times at those really early ages, when you expose them to a live bird, they will actually point. And it's just some autonomic thing within them, if they have good, strong pointing lines in them, that they point and they don't have a clue what they're doing. They do not know that they're pointing. I'm not sure they even know that there is a live bird which might fly away right there. I just think something happens and they just point. And then later on, it's going to maybe fade away or get shorter and shorter. But anyway, if you see it at that age consistently, you know, when you do expose them, that's a good thing. When you see early pointing, you may have it forever, or you may not. So please, you know, if you're new to this stuff, or even if you've had one kind of experience and now you got another dog from another bloodline and you see something, don't, you know, it may last or it may not last. So that's what I've seen. But if you get a little guy and you expose them to birds, live birds, as soon as you can, I mean, and as soon as they start to somehow grasp this situation, you know, then some continual exposure is very good. They may or may not point. If they do point, that's very good. What you want to do, and this is tough, I understand the situation. It's tough. If they do show point, you know, pretty soon their curiosity might overcome this pause thing that they have in there, and they might want to go see what this is. And if it's a catchable bird in a very short order, if they are catchable, now the dog is, when they go on point, they're going to go, what am I doing? And they might want to move in and see if they can get that, you know, because this is like a, you know, tasty morsel or something. So catchable birds are, you know, in the beginning, it's okay when they don't know anything, because then the bird will kind of just sit there. But once they get that idea, having a bird that just sits there is not good. Now, here I'm going into the dog trainer stuff again, and I mean to just be talking about the pointing. So when the dog starts to get better and understand and start looking for these things, the catchable birds are not very good. And there's a whole, you know, quail can be good unless they fly 3 feet 18 inches off the ground and go down again. Now we're going to teach the dogs to chase. In the beginning, that's okay. It cannot become consistent, because if you consistently have catchable birds or birds that fly very low that they can just chase all over the field everywhere, and you're chasing the dog and the dog's chasing the bird till the quail wears out, and so they just learn to be tenacious in their chasing. If it becomes consistent and the behavior could become ingrained, that's when you know you need to stop. You can't, it's too early to not let them chase, and it's too, I know a lot of people have the cords and they stop them right then, you know, I'm sure, and I know there's times when that stuff works, but boy, when you start teaching them, hey, stuff happens to you when you see that bird, which is so delightful and so good, we're talking about puppies now, and I kind of disagree with that. I want them to get very bold and very confident. I have found later on the boldness and the confidence is very good. Also, you don't create any resentment. You know, some dogs do not tend towards resentment when they really want to do something and you just don't let them as a puppy. Some dogs do. So I kind of avoid the resentment thing right there. So I know many, many people, they take all their puppies out on a cord, and as soon as the little puppy gets near a bird, they start slowing it down and stopping it. And I know that with some dogs that has worked. But I think if you don't allow confidence and boldness to build up, you know, but at least in the beginning, you need to let them be very excited about this bird and very comfortable about it. Or later on, you're going to maybe have some problems. So let them be exposed to these birds. Let them do it with some consistency. And you kind of take what happens. Now, there's dogs that I've seen that just lock up and point and they don't move. They just don't move. That's, you know, on the distribution curve, they're at way at the end. There aren't very many of them. And that's a really awesome thing to do. And then later on, you just staunch them up is not a big, big deal. Even them, you don't want catchable birds in case one kind of gets up and walks toward them because it's a pen-raised bird and it's not any smarter. So be careful of that. Many times you get dogs that flash point before they really know what they're doing. They get that convincing scent of a bird, and then they will get a flash point. Now, let me throw this at you if you're going to be doing this stuff. I personally like when you have a bird put somewhere in some cover where it's not stuck so the dog can go and grab it, but where it tends to just want to sit there and stay there, and that way it builds up scent. And you also, in my opinion, it's better to have it where the little guy doesn't see it. So in the beginning, they are responding just to the convincing scent. Because it's easier to stay still when you're not seeing the target of your infatuation than it is to sit still when you do see the target of your fascination. So in the beginning, if these birds are in cover that will let the smell get out, the scent cone can expand where the dog can get to it, but where the dog can't really see it very well. So the kind of cover you use on that stuff is important. It's worth driving around and looking around and finding the right kind of stuff. It can't be so dense that they have to step on top of it to be able to smell it, but it has to be dense enough that they can smell it without seeing it. Later on, you know, the visual thing's going to be because you're going to see birds that you're pointing or, you know, that you're hunting. So that's fine. But in the beginning, you want it to be where it's just the convincing scent. And so it's all kind of in their head more than it is. Because, you know, whenever you throw something and they see it, they're supposed to go get it. So these retrievers, these strong retrievers, are very visually oriented. So let's kill the visual part right now and just have them pointing these things because they're getting the scent of it. And if they don't point, if they just get scent and just go on in there and try to get it, then what you have to do is have it where it can get away if they push in. You know, so you got to be good about planting them. You can't over-dizzy them. You can't hermetically seal them down there so that they learn to dig them out. There's a great skill and art to that kind of thing. But when you're going out and doing this with birds, you have to kind of think about it. All right, I want them to smell it. I don't want them to see it. And if they push in there and they're not pointing, I need the dog to be able to pop out and, you know, run through more cover and get away from the bird, the dog, or just fly away, whichever it was. It's nice when they stay in the cover and you can maybe let them sit down and go look for them again. So that's important. And you take what you get. Even if you're a cord person in the beginning, you just have to take what you get because these guys aren't robots. They have to figure out this bird and dog and environment situation. Now, as the dog gets older, if they start to get kind of crazy and wild and start, you know, the bird flies up, maybe they point it, maybe they don't, but when the bird comes up and takes good flight, and you're in danger of losing your dog because now it can run for 500 yards and chase after these birds or disappear into the trees and you lose them, that's the time you have to stop doing that. That's you don't want to, but that's where you have, if the dog is starting to learn, this is just a wild and crazy free-for-all, and I just chase and dig in there, and they begin to, the search for these birds becomes, you know, just like a real wild rugby game. I'm going to go find this thing and I'm going to grab it. When it becomes that way, you might want to back off for a little bit. When dogs are in that state of mind, the crushing desire to go pursue this bird, to go after it and get your mouth on it, tends to overwhelm that other pointing thing, which is not aggressive and go get it. So a lot of times when you have these dogs, and many of us have these dogs, they point and they don't point. You've seen them point, you know, they'll flash point if certain things are right, but if the bird moves or, you know, whatever, or it's too, they can get right on top of it, then they don't point at all and they go after it. What you have happening is that the aggressiveness and the, oh, I got to get my mouth on this thing, is overwhelming the other aspect of them if they are real pointers. And that is the pointing thing. Now, that's why people use cords. Because when they do get that way, then you have a cord and you can stop them from going in and doing that. Again, I don't do that. Not saying it's the wrong thing to do. But now you're going, he just really wants it. And you're going, no, no, you can't. And he really wants it. No, 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 you can't. And you set up a little bit of a tug of war between the two of you. And some dogs will succumb to that restraint and go, oh, if I'm going to be restrained, okay. And you wear down that aggressiveness to go get your mouth on that thing. You kind of just wear it down by not letting it happen. And so you tend to bring the point out. That works with dogs that have the ability to kind of have you wear down the aggressiveness. There are dogs that does not work with. That they just want to pull harder, or they just want to get away from you, or they just want to chew the cord off so that you quit bothering them. In which case, that may not be the best approach. I don't do the cord. Right? I don't do it because I do what I'm going to talk about right now the same way. So when these dogs get to be a little bit, they're very aggressive about this, they point unless something happens, and they don't point and they're real aggressive. What I like to do on that, what I have found, and there's two things that people do. What I do is I go change their thinking, where the I wanna, I kind of take that away and build in a whole lot more responsiveness. And by that I mean, you know, I will get the obedience on the dog going. And when I say get obedience, I mean we're talking all pro obedience. It's not just kind of a lick and a promise and there, that's good. It's like, boy, when I say something, you do need to, and that's not through pressure, but that's through timing and going at it the right way. I go do that. I'll force fetch him. If they're going to do, you know, if I'm going to go into the handling stuff, I really like that, because when I start doing the pile work, two piles, three piles, going to the back pile, pretty soon you get the sit on the whistle and you get the dog's state of mind changed a lot. So in other words, they're no longer, I mean, they get to go run on to the back pile on the double T. They get to go get it, and they got to come right back, and they got to do it exactly then, turn the way that I say and grab the very first available bumper and come running back. So instead of it being a, I wanna, I love this, this is what I want to do, they're doing some very aggressive work under a lot of control, and they have to think a lot about it. And so they're now being accountable for all of their actions. They're really having to think. And probably the majority of times when I have those, sometimes they point, sometimes they don't, dogs, and I go back and change their state of mind, where, again, like I just said, they have to think about what they're doing. So that I wanna, that just uncontrolled grabbiness, that whole aspect in their head kind of is taken away. And I don't know how many times I've gone through all that stuff, pulled them out of the field because they were just wild and crazy out there having a blast. Go back and get all that other kind of work done. Man, that might take 4 or 6 weeks to get that going, get that in there pretty well. Then go back. And those, I've watched them lock up and hold a point for 2 minutes. And the only reason is because I've altered their perspective and I've altered the way that they deal with themselves. Now they have to take some accountability for their actions. They have to think about them. And a lot of times when they do that and they really are pointers, then they will, that will tend to bring out a little bit of thinking out there and let that passive pointing thing not get overwhelmed with I want it, I want to go get it. That's probably one of the biggest secrets I have, you know, to getting these dogs to the finished level, is that little mind-altering thing. But you have to be aware of that. One of the ways that's done, and this is a pointer guy thing, I know, and I can't explain it like in great detail like I've done it, but there's an electric collar deal where when dogs haven't shown point, and I've seen this work, when they haven't shown point, and you go in there and they put the electric collar on the side, so there's like a little sting there on the side of their flank. And when the dog that's got pointing in them and has not pointed at all, when the dog finds the bird and begins to go in, all right, they have this this sting that happens on them behind them. Not in front of them where the bird is. It's not coming from the bird per se. It's coming from behind them. And so they turn away from the bird to turn around and see what's happening. And that changes the way the dog thinks about this bird. And I'm not exactly sure how it works, because if I'd done it a lot, I'd have a lot better idea. But that can get dogs, when they smell a bird and point and then they stop, because that thing has changed that I'm going to go get it thinking to what the heck was that. And so with dogs, that can stop them, done correctly, not wrong, can stop them from breaking their point and going in. So that's another way. Don't ask me questions about that, because I haven't done that. I've just seen it, and I've seen it be effective. I've seen it be effective on a dog that I never could get to point, and suggested that the owner go try this with someone who knew how to do it, and he did it. Now he's got a 4-time grandmaster, and he's for real. He's a real pointer. So for some reason, that kicked that in with that dog when the other stuff didn't. So sometimes things that are more simply oriented like that can work. Another thing that can be useful is you can go, whoa does not make a dog point. You cannot whoa a dog into a point. You just cannot do it. A point is, if you know what you're looking at, you can tell a real point from somebody who can stop their dog. You can't whoa a dog into a point. But if you take a dog that's been sporadically pointing, or you haven't seen that yet, and you continue, go ahead and go through the whole whoa conditioning process, the whole thing, and then you teach them, you know, guns and things are flying and there's birds in front of you and you just don't move, that does not teach dogs to point. But it does teach them that once they're standing still, no matter what happens, they don't move and they don't go after it. A lot of times, and you can't, let me make sure people understand this. If you have a dog that just flash points for a second or two, that's not going to, and then they go out and flash for us and you've woe broken them, and they go out for their 1.5 second point and you say whoa, that's not going to make them start pointing. That's probably going to make them stop flash pointing at all, because you're getting in the middle of everything. But when you do have a dog that where the pointing starts kicking in, now when the pointing does kick in, okay, you can go back to your whoa stuff and introduce the live birds flapping around and the temptations and the guns and the go get it and all that stuff. And you get really work on that. Go back into the upland field with your dog that points, and the odds of them moving again after that are very low if you've done your whoa stuff right. So that's another way, if the dog's far enough along that you can go ahead and capture it. So right here, what I've said in this period of time, bird exposure, have to have bird exposure. And you can't have 3 or 4 bird exposures. You cannot have, in my opinion, the little cages, okay? Okay, we've got a pigeon in a cage, and every time that dog gets close, we're going to pop that thing. That teaches them, it teaches them a lot of stuff. I have never, ever seen it. You know, it might teach them, boy, if you smell one of the launchers, don't get too close. And that sucker hurts if you're too close or is real loud or scary or whatever. I haven't seen that work. Maybe it can get them to back off. Maybe it can get them to be steady, you know, to the flush. I have never seen that. I could be wrong. Somebody else could say, yes, I've seen it. I haven't seen that kick the point in. But I have seen a lot of exposure to birds that they cannot catch that can fly away. I have seen the collar thing on the flank where when they want to go on in a bird, something makes them stop from going in on the bird. That's not, no, don't get it. It's not, whoa. You're not saying whoa and putting pressure on them. That can kick dogs in. The cord, holding them on the cord and not letting them go if they're passive enough kind of dog to let you do that stuff, that can kick it in. The final thing that I have seen, for me, probably one of the most effective things, is if you de-chase them. Because if you have a dog that does have real point in them, and then they learn that when they point and then they go bust that bird up, flush it up, they can't go after it. For many dogs, that if since they can't chase it, there's no point in bringing it up, because then they don't get the retrieve. They don't get any of the fun at all. They just called off. They go another direction and look for another bird. So de-chasing these dogs, teaching them that when that bird is in the air, you do not go after it until I shoot it or otherwise tell you something to do. So de-chase is another one of the things that kicks in pointing. If you just have it just hit and miss or for a real short period of time. Probably patience and consistency on your part and staying to the program. Those are the most important things. You need the bird exposure, uncatchable birds that fly. If you don't have those, it's going to be very hard to go through the metamorphosis that these dogs, many of them, most of them have to go through to understand that. And once you do have them where you have whoa and you have the de-chase, it's not like you're done then. Now they have to go understand that sometimes birds, you know, hunker down somewhere and don't move. Sometimes birds do move. If you have to go in there and be 6 inches away from it on a bird that's moving, you're never going to be able to get hold of that bird. You know, by that, I mean point it and get it produced and all that stuff. So it's important that you have a lot of exposure. Even when you get your training tools, you aren't by any means finished yet. Now, I've added so many people. It's, you know, the South Dakota thing's been going on, and I guess it's been a good year up there for birds. So when you take your young pointing retriever and, you know, because here you bought this and he points and he kind of retrieves and does the stuff. He doesn't really know a lot of stuff yet, and he's not finished. He's not solid on anything. And you take him up there where 20 birds are running down the deal, or if they find one, unless they're hunkered down in the snow. If there's no snow and these birds are running all around, you know, that'll depoint a dog just about as fast as anything in the world. You can't point a bird that's running, you know, a 6-minute mile, just running down there's no pointing there. That's just a chasing thing. So you can kind of undo a good de-chase there. You can undo a lot of things on a young dog in that kind of environment where there are just birds, a lot of birds everywhere, and they run a lot. And then even, you know, a lot of times you're pointing, you're retrieving one and you run by where there's another one. And so then do they stop? Do I grab the one I'm smelling now, or do I grab the one I think I saw? So that can be very overwhelming on young dogs. It's not good on a real young dog if you want to go get the finished kind of tricked out dog snob level of dog. Probably not the best thing to do. Take old Fang that really knows what he's doing and knows when he's supposed to go and not go and, you know, yeah, go around that one back this way. Again, a lot of times you can teach dogs to come back, hunt back towards you so the birds aren't getting driven away. But anyway, we're talking about kicking point in. South Dakota is probably not a real good place to kick the point in, but pheasants that are hunkered down in the snow can often be helpful. And that's the story that I want to tell you about a dog right now that I had given up on the pointing stuff. I got a dog one time. I don't think he'd been on birds when I got him. And he wasn't 6 months old. He was over a year. High desire guy. And so I got him in, was doing the basics. So he's a little older than I normally get him. Not much. Got him in, did the basic stuff. Loved to retrieve. I mean, this guy, you could break 3 of his legs and he'd pogo stick out there on one and go get a bird and come back. Just so insistent. Just really a super aggressive retriever. Did the obedience, did the force fetch, got all that stuff going. Great retriever. You could drop a duck in some lava and he'd go get it, bring it back to you. Go put him on upland birds because he was out of, you know, some very good pointing dogs. And there wasn't a lick of point in that guy. We used to just refer to him as a heat-seeking missile. And just do it every week, like all the pointing dogs, right? He'd go out there, and he just got better and better and faster about getting those birds up. So I was like, yeah, sorry, he's not pointing, but boy, he's going to find the birds for you. So he takes them off and doesn't, you know, he doesn't point while they're hunting. And he brings him back for, and this is kind of important, I think, but he brings him back for the handling stuff. Brought him back for the handling stuff. And the other thing he said, I can't exactly remember the timing on this, because I think he came back because he wanted the advanced stuff. He wanted to go get Master Hunter and all that, all of which he did, of course. He wanted that stuff. And he had taken him, or maybe I'd gotten that on him. We'd gotten all the handling and everything. Just no point at all. Just he was a heat-seeking missile, but really good at that. And he took him hunting over the off season, and went hunting when it had snowed, I think it was Kansas. They were hunting wild pheasant in Kansas, which, unlike South Dakota, there aren't 300 of them in a field, maybe 6. You know, it's a little bit different. And it had snowed, and he said that when they were there, if there's a lot of other dogs along, this guy would be very competitive, and he wouldn't dream of stopping because somebody else might get his bird. But I think they were off doing their thing. And the dog just locked up and pointed one of those hummocks where there's a pheasant in there under the snow. And he pointed. And so it was like, finally, he was like 18 months old or something like that. And 2 years old, maybe. And he was pointed. And so he brought him back and said, yeah, I want to get him all finished off and I want to run the events this year. And he pointed. And so, of course, I'm thinking, yeah, right. He probably stubbed his toe or broke a toenail or something. Because he was, I mean, that dog was so fast, so fast. You had to be really ready, because if he knew there was a bird somewhere, that hummer was coming up. And sure enough, he, you know, we get reviewing all the stuff and brushing all the rust off and getting him ready for the trick, more advanced stuff. And so I go put him out on birds. And he did. He pointed. He was actually pointing. These are pen-raised birds, you know, the setup thing, not a wild bird in the snow. And he was pointing. And so I was like, well, we're going to really wool break this guy. And so really did the full-out wool conditioning on him. He fully de-chased. And he was de-chased as a flusher. But he'd get that sucker up so fast. So we get it. He's just got all the training and stuff, and it's like, great, you know, we have a chance now at this Grandmaster stuff. And so it's that we have a, actually it was right on our place. We had a doubleheader. It was his first ones. It was his very first. He'd missed all the APLA stuff. Everyone else is getting APLA titles and getting 4 times, and not this dog and his owner, and that's what he wanted. You know, I think there was a little bit of, darn, this is kind of disappointing. So they have one of the first ones in the spring right here at our place, a doubleheader. So day one, we go out in the certified field. And he passes. He passes back. That's when you had to get certified. Now you don't have to. You can just jump right in. But he got certified. I was like, great. We're going to go right for master. So the very next day, second day of the doubleheader, and I remember this day really well. It's we're in the master now, and his owner and his wife are standing right there watching, you know, and this talk's pretty good. And we get through all the marks and blinds because, boy, can he do those things. And we go out in the upland field, and there's Chucker out there. And I'm very excited. This is going to be cool. This dog's really good. And I tap him on the head. Everybody, we're right there watching. And he goes out, can't be more than 40 feet. There was a Chucker that was actually returning, how they do when you plant them, the ones that don't get shot. And they just start coming right back to the where the bird crate was and all this stuff. This was a returner. He just ran over there, picked that up, and brought it over and handed it to me. Out right there. We're just done. It couldn't have been 15 or 20 seconds. And we were in and out. Just reached out, caught it, brought it back. So I know they later told me, they were like, see, he won't. I guess he won't. This just won't work. You know, if it's not a wild bird stuck in the snow, it's not going to work. So the odd thing I did was, so we had, there was some more coming. We had more tests that coming up after that. And actually, I think that day that we had another one the next day. So I just went up, believe it or not, I just went into my bird pen, took him in there with birds flying around, and just reminded him. Now, when I remind him, let's say you remind pretty strong, because that's how he is. He's the lava. I'll get a duck and the lava dog. But I just went in there and said, when you're around birds, you don't move. I didn't really know what else to do because that dog was so fully trained. So anyway, that evening we went in and went in there again and just strong reminder, when you see birds and do all that stuff, took it and then just put him to bed, got up the next morning, next day, and ran the second shot at it. And he marks and blinds again. That was pretty straightforward for him. And he did the upland field just fine. And he passed that upland field, and he passed nine more in a row. Nine more straight. And he went from that catching his first bird the first day in 20 seconds, like, I don't know what that was. And then we went all the way through. He actually got his 4.5 time. That doesn't exist, but he passed all of those, every one of them. On the hottest, most horrible days, one time we were in Missouri, it was over 100 degrees, humid, not a lick of wind. It was a terrible day, very hard on the dogs. You know, they're going to be right on top of them in that thick, deep, wet grass. And I don't know why, I just relaxed. I think that's when he got his four and his 4.5 time at that one. And I thought, I don't know, I just feel kind of relaxed about this super aggressive dog, super aggressive. And he goes out there and he points him. Still pretty far away, given that there's not a lick of wind. And we passed both of those days. You know, they finally go, oh, we've seen enough, take him in. It was just absolutely flabbergasting. One of the best pointers I have ever had in my life. Best pointers ever. And so all I can say is it was exposure to real birds. It was the advanced training. And it was the wool breaking. And for some reason, that dog then put it all together. And he's a four-time, I don't know if he's a hunter retriever champion yet. He's a AKC master hunter. There's absolutely nothing he cannot do. And yet for the first year and a half or 2 years of his life, he was a heat-seeking, flushing machine. Because we stayed at it, did all of the advanced training, I can't tell you why, great bloodlines. But then when that dog kicked in, he kicked in as good as you possibly could. And for whatever that anomalous day when he went in 40 feet and grabbed a Chucker and came out, and you know, it was like, oh, all of this is for nothing, all the birds we've done, all of that, if we put that down, oh, it's just huge expense, bunch of time, and he's never going to do it. And he turned out to be one of the best ever. So be patient about this stuff. Go ahead you know, it's like in the last thing, don't give up. Just keep going at it. Do all the pieces of this that go through. And there's a dog that didn't point. Now, I want to say again, very strong pointing bloodlines. So that doesn't mean they'll point. I've had super strong bloodlines where the dogs never pointed. But because of that, we kept at it. And he's in my group of most elite pointing labs that I've ever trained, if you don't count the first 2 years. And after that, he was fantastic. So pointing, kicking the pointing in, sometimes it takes a little creativity. It takes patience. It takes a little bit of work. It takes birds. It takes going out there on a frequent basis and doing the exposure. It also takes knowing when to back off and don't let bad habits get going. Because those things, then you got to go correct work that you've done to them, and that's not really fair. I would suggest never changing the rules on these guys. That's why you want to de-chase. You can woe break. Don't be screaming woe out there when they're not pointing, because that just makes woe mean nothing. Besides, woe is really mostly used in training, and if you do it right, it's not so much out in the field. So that's the story today and the thing about kicking in the pointing. I hope that's kind of helpful. It's a lot of stuff, and there's nothing absolute. You have to find out which kind of dog you have and then approach it that way, and also be very, very patient and kind of stay at it. So again, happy Thanksgiving to everybody, and I hope that the virus stays away from all of you and your family and your loved ones and your friends. It's kind of a scary time. Wish everybody the best, and I will be back soon.